You're listening to Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. Up next, Flora Lichtman is here with our video pick of the week. Flora, welcome.
Hi, Ira.
What have we got today?
This week we have a good one, I think. We visited with someone who has a very unusual job here in New York. His name's Justin Muir, and his company's called City Aquarium. And basically, the only way to put it, he's an aquarist to the stars. I mean, literally.
Yeah?
He works with a lot of celebrities, mostly rich people. I mean, to be blunt, his aquariums are really expensive. They're custom designed and built and installed, you know, tailored specifically for his client's penthouse in Time Warner Building. That's a true story. And they run, you know, $50,000 to $400,000 was his top aquarium.
Wow. And so what makes it so expensive? What's inside these tanks?
I mean, I think it's partly the manufacturing and the design. But one of the things that we wanted to find out is where these luxury sea creatures come from. And it turns out they come from New Jersey. so we went fish shopping with Justin to Merritt Imports in Paramus and got to see sort of how he picks out different fish and what he looks for. Mm-hmm. And one of the best things he told us was really he gave us a bunch of fish selection tips. So you don't have to be looking for luxury fish yourself. This will work on any fish.
Yeah, and this is not a fish market where you're getting – dead fish on ice. This is live fish. And if you go to our website at sciencefriday.com, our video pick of the week, Flora's video pick up there on our left side, is showing us a tour of his fish tanks, right?
Yeah, so we got to see him buy fish, and then he also grows his own giant clams and cultivates his own coral in this Brooklyn warehouse. And it's also where he does all his quarantining of his fish before they go into his clients.
I remember aquariums. That. I remember that from my days because I used to actually have a reef tank.
Yeah?
I was one of these fish geeks. Had a small reef tank.
A reef geek? You are? I can't believe it.
Well, I think for the rest of the hour, I mean, because we're both interested in this, we're going to try to call all fish geeks like myself and others. If you have you keep a reef tank, I think you coined a great word.
I didn't coin it, but yes, coralholics, please call in. And I think this is relevant, too, because what Justin does, especially any time, but in this economic climate probably feels pretty irrelevant to most people. But you don't have to be a celebrity to keep a reef tank.
So. Yeah, and you can keep them in all kinds of sizes. And if you have questions, if you'd want to participate, our number is 1-800-989-8255. Maybe you want to start a reef tank or what? You have one.
Maybe, you know, you'd like to know. You're just thirsting to know how to prune staghorn coral or, you know, perhaps you have coral torpors that you're trying to manage or maybe you want to keep your clownfish happy and you just don't know how. If any of these questions apply to you, they apply to our next guest. His name's Joe Waiulo and he has built one of the biggest saltwater aquariums in the world. He's the co-founder and curator of Atlantis Marine World in Riverhead, New York, and he joins us from WBLI in Long Island. Welcome to the program, Joe.
Oh, appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
So tell us, let's start with the specs on your tank at Atlantis. How big is it? Give us a sense of the scale.
The tank itself is 30 feet long. It's 14 feet front to back, about 6.5 feet deep, a little over 20,000 gallons.
Wow. And how long have you been working on it?
The aquarium now is in its 10th year. There are some corals within the tank that I've had in my collection for over 20 years now.
Wow. I mean, and you started doing this when people didn't know that you could actually grow coral in captivity, right?
Yeah, back in the mid to late 80s, it was a little known science on how to maintain and keep these creatures alive and happy and healthy. So it's been quite a run over the last 20 years.
Well, tell us a little bit about that. I mean, what were some of the landmark moments for you in coral, keeping coral alive?
Initially, when I first started volunteering at the New York Aquarium in Coney Island, and I was eventually hired on as an aquarist, and they had a small reef tank there that had some corals that were doing okay. Some would linger, some would fade away, but there was a few that were quite hardy and grew. And the moment I saw them growing new polyps was the instant I was hooked. That was back in 1987.
That's when you became a coralholic?
Yeah. I coined that term in the very early 90s when myself and a bunch of friends were looking at a coral shipment, and we just looked like a bunch of addicts around this reef tank, and realize we really do have a problem.
Are there coral that you have your eye on that you haven't figured out how to keep alive in your tank, but you'd like to?
The area of interest now is going into corals that are non-photosynthetic that need particular foods, which sometimes we're not quite sure what they are yet. So that's the new area of reef keeping that's gaining a lot of attention now. And that normally would have to be done on a smaller scale because the concentration of food is so great.
I wonder if people are learning more about coral from reef keepers than or as much than the people studying them in the wild, because you must have to know sort of their exact environmental demands if you're going to keep them alive.
Yeah, that's a good point. Initially, a lot of the coral researchers were only looking at corals in the wild, and a number of things that they wanted to study they weren't able to do in the reef proper itself. But a lot of times some scientists are not the greatest animal keepers. And Dr. Bruce Carlson at Waikiki Aquarium at the time was realizing that the home hobbyists were maintaining, you know, luxurious reef tanks in captivity, and that these could actually be scientific tools. And he was a great individual for bridging the gap between the scientists and the hobbyists.
Let's go to the phones, 1-800-989-TALK. Rocky, do you have a question?
Hello? Yeah, I do. I'm actually one of these fish geeks myself. I got married and I bought an entire, I invested like $6,000 and bought a bunch of aquariums and thought I was going to be some huge rare breeder of African cichlids from Lake Tanganyika and do all this. And I was just wondering, at what point did you decide this is how I'm going to earn a living, what I do? Because, like, I've been doing aquariums for like 20 years now, and I thought about it when I made the investment into buying all these aquariums and running piping and pumps and stuff. But when you make the jump, and like, how did you find the means to design these aquariums, and just how did you get started, I guess, is my big question.
For myself, within the public aquarium industry, I grew up on Long Island and was fishing the local bays and kept tanks as a kid. It just seemed to be a natural progression. I worked at the New York Aquarium in Coney Island for about 8 years. About a year and a half into that process, I realized that this was a career that I wanted to pursue, but not in Brooklyn. So I ended up meeting a guy, Jimmy Bissett, and co-founded the public aquarium out at Atlantis. And it was a great marriage because, he didn't know anything about a fish tank, but knew he wanted to do in an aquarium. And I handled all the filtration and exhibit design and life support. So I basically get paid to do what I did as a kid, which is a pretty good deal.
Thanks, Rocky. Thanks for calling. Let's keep with the phone calls because people are really interested. We've got Mary in Harvard, Mass.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
What's your question?
Well, I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but my husband was a fish collector for a number of years in Hawaii in the late 70s, and he got out of the business. You know, he would catch all kinds of tropical fish, ocean water fish, juveniles, all kinds, and he got out of the business when he realized that keeping an aquarium, especially a saltwater aquarium, was predicated on the death of the fish and the continuing death of the animals.
Well, that may have been true in the early years, especially in saltwater reef keeping, but that's hardly the case now. We're captively breeding many marine fishes now. In fact, there's a whole box full of clownfish in my truck at the moment. I'm going to a reef club meeting tonight. We're growing and propagating many of these species. So there's a lot of the pressures are removed off the wild, and if they are collected in a sustainable way, these fish are more than enough reef fish out there to be collected.
Thanks for calling, Mary.
Do you see yourself as a preservationist, as someone who's keeping fish alive that might be dying out in the wild, or keeping soft shell coral or hard tail coral out there now that coral are dying everywhere around the world?
It's a way of increasing awareness to the general public, to the importance of maintaining these habitats within the wild. regarding the animal breeding and coral propagation, I mean, we're breeding and propagating so many corals, not that they would be reintroduced back to the wild, but, you know, if it came down to it, applications like Ken Niedermeyer that's using down in Florida, he's replanting reefs that have been impacted tremendously with corals that were devastated, the elkhorn and staghorn corals. And he's been able to take what we've done in reef tanks and is rebuilding actual reefs down in Florida at this moment. So, you know, there may have been a little curve there in the beginning on trying to figure out how to keep some of these animals alive, and there were some mortalities, but it's part of the process of trying to figure out what's going on. And now it's gotten to the point where, you know, pretty much anybody can go out and, as long as the tank is set up properly, can have a flourishing reef.
You know, Mary does bring up a good point, though. When I was in Paramus with Justin Muir, one of the fish buyers who's taking care of the fish there said, you know, mentioned some of the collection techniques that maybe are being phased out now, but using cyanide on reefs and dynamite. And he avoids fish because they don't survive that well. But this is a concern in the aquarium trade, right?
Oh, it's definitely a concern. Wherever humans are involved, you know, we're not a great species as far as being doing things in a sustainable way. But in general, there's a lot of a lot of collectors. This is their livelihood. Raising the awareness of the local peoples in those areas that these reefs are worth preserving. So if you can teach them how to collect in a sustainable way, so they're not destroying their reefs, they have more food, they have more money, and they'll end up protecting the environment a lot better in those areas instead of using the cyanide or dynamite fishing. A lot of their collection practices, a lot of it is based on ignorance and not realizing there is another way to do it.
Joe, I think we have a caller with a question, a reef geek with a question for you that you may be able to help him with. Brian in Naples, what's your question?
Hi, I have a hair algae problem, and we have two reef stores in Naples, and one has had me purchase sea hares and the blue tang and yellow tang, and the other store says that you just have to live with it because it doesn't help, and the sea hares will just die off. So I was wondering if you could give me some advice, because I just can't seem to beat the...
Yeah, I had that. That's what drove me out of the aquarium, the algae, the slimy hair algae.
Take
over.
Well, if those were the two answers you were given, I would suggest maybe looking for another store, first off, because that information's kind of limited. You really want to attack the source of the problem, and it's usually organic nutrient buildup that is fueling these algae. So you need to really take a close look at your phosphates and nitrate levels, detritus accumulating in the tank. By buying the sea hares and things like that, you're not curing the symptom, you're just treating the ailment. So you really want to look at your water qualities, your lighting, and also your circulation is crucial in those matters.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling, Brian. You're listening to Science Friday on NPR.
I'll tell you, happiness is a yucky protein skimmer.
Ira said that twice today.
Right?
Yes. Oh, if you're a true reef geek, you just can stand there and look at a head of foam forming on your reef tank protein skimmer and just actually enjoy it. It's kind of sad.
Yucky, and tell people, because you want to take the protein, the fish food, the feces, the fish out of the water, because that's what pollutes the water, and it comes out in something called a skimmer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically the protein skimmer is there. If you ever go to the ocean on a windy day and that foam, that froth is blowing ashore, that's loaded with organics, and we're duplicating that process within a protein skimmer. The skimmer I have at Atlantis is quite large. It's over 10 feet tall. It processes 200 gallons per minute. And
I've got skimmer envy here.
Yes. I muck it out, you know, by hand. I could put an automatic cleaner on there, but I like to see the consistency of the foam and make sure that it's, you know, operating at peak efficiency. And
I think we've hit a new level of reef geeky.
This is true aquarium geek talk.
Yeah, I actually weighed the muck one time, and that's when my reef buddy friend was like, "Now you've gone too far. You're actually now weighing exactly how much stuff is coming out of there."
You know, one thing I wanted to ask you, because I don't have a saltwater aquarium, and I never have, but I really love fish and sea creatures, and it seems like for reef geeks, it's really the main attraction here are the coral. And I think people don't quite understand, who are not coral enthusiasts or coralholics, what it sounds like watching paint dry. You know, I'm looking at a rock. What's the big deal? Why is it? Why does it bring you pleasure?
Yeah, well, I mean, corals are animals, and they are quite dynamic in their growth and their form. They're a constant challenge because they, as they do grow in, it changes the ballpark and the ball field, and you're trying to figure out how to keep them alive even further. The colors and the shapes and the textures, it you know, sometimes people just view them as the colorful background to these reef fishes.
You described it as a game of chess, and what do you mean by that?
Well, you plant your garden, basically, even though they are animals, you call them like a coral garden. And as they grow in, you have to meet their challenges, and they're challenging you to meet those challenges. So it's this ongoing chess match where you're maneuvering the parameters of the tank, your lighting, your circulation. And just like a garden, if you don't tend to it, it'll get overgrown and you'll end up with just a couple of large bushes instead of a nicely planted garden. And you have to do the same thing with your reef tanks. And you can maintain your reef tanks and have really old corals that aren't very large because you can have them as like a bonsai reef tank, or you can allow them to grow in to be quite large. I mean, I just got back from Fiji, and I saw individual coral colonies that were the size of 2-car garages.
Wow.
It was just mind-boggling.
Wow.
Mind-boggling.
Joe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Joe Waiulu is the co-founder and curator of Atlantis Marine World in Riverhead, New York.
And thank you, Flora. And if you want to see Flora's video pick of the week, it's up there, right?
That's right.
What do we see in that video?
Oh, so many sea creatures. I stuck as many in as possible and some coral, too. Don't
All
worry.
All right. Go to our website at sciencefriday.com and see the video pick of the week. If you want to think about building your own coral reef, there's one way to start doing that. Our program senior producer is Annette Heist. Charles Berquist is our director. Flora Lichtman is our multimedia editor and soon-to-be coral reefer. Our producers are Christopher Intagliata, Catherine Wales, Alessio Bayek, Neil Rausch, our technical director at the controls here in New York. And, of course, if you missed any part of today or any of Science Friday's broadcasts, you can now catch them as podcasts, of course. Go to our website at sciencefriday.com. We have links to other stuff we're talking about. Also, download them on your iPhone, your iPad, and also on Android, and take them along with you wherever you go. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.